Buddhist Geeks. Seriously Buddhist, seriously geeky. Episode 52, The Spiritual Radical. In this episode, Noah Levine answers questions about the Theravada ideals of enlightenment, talks about the spiritual radical, and shares some of his concerns with regards to the environment. This is part two of a two-part series. This episode of Buddhist Geeks is sponsored by the Do No Harm Movement. To learn more about the Do No Harm Movement and to receive your free Do No Harm bumper sticker and wristband, please visit donoharm.us.
That kind of transitions nicely into another question I had for you, which is talking about suffering in terms of the end of greed, hatred, and delusion, which is very traditional, do you find that to be a pretty good criteria for awakening? Or is that something maybe that's a little bit often misinterpreted or misperceived as being some sort of, you know, emotionless, personalityless, and unreachable ideal?
Right. I do. I mean, I like kind of to use the term end of, even though I'm sure I do use that term in my book, maybe freedom from is better. Freedom from greed, hatred, and delusion, which perhaps means that greed and hatred and delusion in the forms of attachment and aversion and, kind of conceit of self or I. And freedom from it maybe means that it's not an end, that it doesn't go away. I make a strong point about this in Against the Stream. That even the Buddha, it doesn't go away forever. You just change your relationship to it.
Right. Like he was still had serious back issues towards the end of his life.
Mara keeps coming back.
Yeah, that's something I've heard Jack say a couple times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's where, because if we present it as it's ended, it's gone, it's uprooted, as some of the original scriptures say.
Right.
It doesn't quite fit when, I still have a mind and a body and emotions, and they're not gone. They're not ended. I can be free from misidentification with them sometimes. I can have the experience of craving arise and not act on it. That's freedom. I can have aversion, to pain arise and not meet it with hatred and judgment. That's freedom. But aversion and attachment or craving never arising? I don't know how possible that is.
Right.
I don't even know if that was the Buddha's experience.
Right.
Even though a lot of the Theravadan scriptures do say that that is what enlightenment means. I don't know how to sort of justify that with him also saying that Mara keeps coming back and checking in to see if his awakening has taken hold.
Right.
Just sort of Mara is like, hey, Buddha, are you still paying attention? Here's a little lust in your mind. Are you still paying attention? Here's a little, fear or anger. Are you still paying attention? And the Buddha every time saying, I see you, Mara. I am paying attention. Well, you're just that impersonal, impermanent, ego phenomena that happens if you have a body. And so there is an end to greed, hatred, and delusion, as in an end to being a slave to it, an end to being identified with it as self.
So you had this interesting schema towards the end of the book, and seemed like it was describing a natural progression that one would make as one becomes more and more involved with Dharma practice. And you called these three different relationships to practice the spiritual rebel, the revolutionary, and the radical. And each one was progressively more committed to the practice, or at least spending more time with it. And I was wondering if you could describe, not sure if they're ideals or if they're just relationships one has to practice, but I was wondering if you could describe those.
Well, I was just kind of trying to, so many people want to know, okay, well, how do I do this? How much should I sit? And
right.
How should I live? And so I thought, well, what a good idea to just you know, give people 5-year practice suggestions.
Mm.
You know, and the rebel, you know, for kind of spend 5 years practicing the precepts, finding a sangha and getting involved, you know, taking refuge in Buddha Dharma Sangha and really getting involved in a weekly sangha and doing, you know, some meditation retreats and really doing a sort of progress of insight type of training of really studying the Satipatthana and the Brahma Viharas.
Mm-hmm.
And then sort of expanding upon that, like, okay, what about the next 5 years? Okay, of like doing a group and sitting for a month or 2 months and, you know, doing kind of longer like lanes retreats type of experiences and getting more involved in that transition from personal practice to altruistic practice and beginning to really be of service, you know, offering our life's energy for the benefit of all beings, you know, so whatever that looks like. And then ultimately that sort of last path, that radical path of kind of a teacher's path, you know, somebody who after 10 years or more of practice has, you know, developed enough insight through their own practice and enough commitment to service and generosity that they actually begin to share the Dharma with others as a generous and compassionate offering to help guide people to freedom.
Mm.
You know, something around that, with the five precepts being the kind of baseline of ethical behavior for all practitioners and daily practice and different focuses within daily practice. I think the revolutionary, I talk about really focusing for years on forgiveness and compassion practice to really free one's heart from the pains of the past that we're carrying around.
Mm. Was that a big part of your path?
No, it's been a huge part of my practice, yeah.
Mm.
Many, many, many. And ongoing, you know, practice of forgiveness and compassion and changing my relationship to this mind that's often judgmental and body that's often uncomfortable. And
yeah, it's not, that doesn't sound that cool. I think you're right.
Not that sexy.
And yet, I mean, there's obviously value to the path, and it's obviously there is greater and greater freedom from doing those practices, and that's part of why you wrote the book.
Yeah. I mean, the experience of whatever level of liberation is so worthy of the effort that it takes to get there. You know, whether it's that first taste of liberation that I got, you know, in that jail cell of like freedom from the future, freedom from the past,
mm-hmm.
or the deeper and deeper levels of freedom from aversion to pain. Learning to tolerate pain, to sit with it, and to ultimately begin to care about it and to meet pain with compassion. And these sort of different levels of liberation that come when we're serious about our practice of renunciation and coming more into harmony with impermanence and allowing nature to be nature, you know, and stop trying to control everything. And so for me, it's been a very gradual process. There's no sort of major instant enlightenment experiences, but just a slow, you know, the last 20 years of seeing, wow, I'm getting better at being kind, getting better at not taking this mind so personal, getting better at being present, gradually creating less and less suffering and experiencing more and more equanimity, maybe, you know, that sort of wise, balanced perception of the world. Not being so in control, or the delusion of being in control, and learning to ride the waves of change.
Mm.
I'm really feeling like, and of course I present it this way because it really feels like it's this rebellion, and it's what the Buddha said, like you got to go against the stream. The stream is to continue creating extra difficulties for ourselves. And the path to awakening is to go against the status quo, the norm, the biological survival instinct that gets these minds to hold on to resentments forever, these bodies to reject discomfort and pain, physical or emotional.
Interesting. So going against the stream is both a cultural thing and a biological thing, kind of how we're
Definitely.
Hardwired.
Yeah. Mm. Rewiring That's what the transformation is this gradual rewiring, reprogramming, responding rather than reacting.
Thanks for sharing that. Definitely appreciate that.
Of course.
So those are pretty much all the different topics I thought it'd be interesting to go into. But obviously, if there's anything else that you'd like to add or anything else you'd like to share, feel free.
Well, I don't know. I don't have a real agenda to go into anything else. I mean, of course, something that is on my mind and a lot of our minds these days is the sort of ecology and you know, welfare of this planet, which is an interesting thing from a Buddhist perspective, right? Of seeing this world as samsara, seeing this planet as really a temporary realm of constant change.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's one kind of perspective, which is like, no big surprise. Of course, you know, the greed and hatred and delusion of this realm has gone so far as to, you know, really been so destructive as to eventually make this planet uninhabitable by human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And what a tragedy. You know, what a tragedy. And so I'm just, you know, getting my mind around more and more, you know, sort of political and ecological action.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've spent a lot of time on the kind of personal, on the human realm of helping people and doing my own practice and working in the jails and prisons and all of that stuff. But, and somewhat scoffing at the, as a punk rocker, somewhat scoffing at the tree-hugging hippies.
Right.
But there might be something here for me, too, about being a newlywed and totally in love and becoming less nihilistic about things.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps more attached to existence and the existence of this planet for, you know, my children and my children's children.
Right.
You know, there was a time where in my early vehemence of practice, it was kind of like, well, it doesn't matter because I'm going to get enlightened and get out of samsara. You know? But I don't feel that way so much anymore. I feel much more of a moving towards kind of stewardship and, right. much, and, you know, and even towards the sort of bodhisattva ideal. Not the unrealistic everyone's going to get enlightened bodhisattva, but that commitment to working for positive change.
Right.
So I don't have any real set solutions or answers, but it's definitely something that's on my mind and is becoming more and more forefront in my practice.
Right.
You know, and as somebody who does have the ability to do some organizing, you know, I'm looking at you know, how can I use my life's energy to do more of that organizing. And my teacher, Jack Kornfield, has inspired me a lot
mm-hmm.
around that. You know, he's really been focusing more on kind of political and social organizing. And so I am also moving more in that direction as a teacher.
Mm. Great. Well, I had one last question, kind of a reverent question for you, and then I figured we could sign off. I was wondering if you thought that Buddha, boxers or briefs, if you're around now.
Somebody asked me that recently. I was being interviewed by, I don't know if he was asking me if the Buddha boxers or brief, or if he was asking me for me. It's funny. You know, the Buddha was free-balling.
That's true.
Neither.
That's a good point.
You know, the monastics, they have their little kind of undergarment, which is like a, you know, a kind of a small wrap, you know, but there's no actual underpants.
Good answer.
That's a good bumper sticker. The Buddha was a free-baller.
That might be a good title for this podcast.
Right. That's, maybe that's the kind of freedom he was talking about.
Awesome.
Free your testes. And your mind will follow.
We got the audio. Our audio guy is laughing now too. Great. Cool. Thank you, Noah, for that. And thank you for taking the time to talk to us too. We definitely appreciate it.
My pleasure. Yeah, thank you. And thanks for the good work that you guys are doing over there on the podcast.